This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. There's more on power987.co.za.
I'm Ayabong Atawe. Thank you for downloading this Power Business podcast.
South African Airways will receive yet another bailout from taxpayers, all of us would have heard from the Finance Minister Tito Mboweni announcing in the medium-term budget policy statement that they'll be receiving 5 billion through a special appropriation to settle debt redeemable until March next year. So it means some of that debt is due. And Tito Mboweni has been clear that unless the SAA board can present a plan, there won't be any further drag on the fiscus, and SAA may need to be partially privatized or privatized in a full. And of course, this continues some of the discourse around finding a strategic equity partner for the national carrier. Now, the risk for the national coffers, according to the National Treasury, is that SAA has a 19.1 billion rand government guarantee, 14.5 billion rand of which has already been used. So that's, one would say, the lion's share. And also, SAA has a 14.2 billion of repayments that are due in the month of March in 2019. In essence, the airline is not generating sufficient cash to repay some of its total debt and will have to negotiate with lenders to refinance or even extend the maturity dates of some of the debt that it has issued. And the big question that we're asking today is whether or not we need it. And much like with any debate here in South Africa, you have people on the one side suggesting that, look, this is a strategic asset. It's a national key point, and a country like ours ought to have a national carrier. And some of the arguments are advanced to that end about the impact that privatizing it would potentially have on some downstream industries that benefit from SAA. And on the other side of that conversation, many people have suggested that it's been too much of a drag on our fiscus for long enough, and we should cut our losses and let this one go, either through the form of a strategic equity partner, which would effectively partially privatize SAA, much similar to what happened to Telkom many years ago, or fully privatize it, as happened with ISCO, which is now ArcelorMittal. And we ask ourselves today, this evening, whether both of these options would be suitable, or which side of the fence you sit on. So do send through some of those calls on 0861-987-000. Do you think SAA should be privatized either partially or in full? Or should we continue to try and salvage whatever may be left of the national carrier and try and place some faith in the turnaround strategy that has been presented by the leadership of the national carrier, and hope that we can see that through, even if it means a negative or detrimental impact on our public resources? I'm joined on the line by Hlulani Mokoena. He is a transport economist and also a lecturer in transport economics at the Northwest University. Hlulani, always a pleasure, my brother, to catch up with you. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm great. But I'm very, very worried. It's another season, Ayawonga. Thanks again for reaching out.
Why are you worried, man? Katazwayi in Hlulani.
Well, firstly, because the dynamics, the conversation is really, the way we're talking about South African Airways at the moment is with the perspective of it being a national carrier and not an entity that we can actually use to carry the nation. And this is partly to lead us into this single African air transport market, and also to turn into a platform that we can use for industrial development. And I know it's really sort of not really on the table, it's not really in the narrative.
Yeah.
No one's talking about this side of SAA, but I'm really of the view that we should be thinking about it as an investment.
Let's unpack that for a second.
Okay.
Because operation the size of the South African Airways, even if we didn't know enough about the downstream and even some of the upstream industry that benefits from it, just the magnitude of it already should suggest to us that there's already all manner of industrial relationships that create jobs, add value to our economy downstream and even upstream by way of sort of input of parts and all manner of maintenance and servicing of some of the fleet here. And sometimes that seems to be lost in the debate. But just unpack that for us. What does it look like upstream? Who are the sort of some of the industries that benefit from SAA continuing to exist? And even downstream, where are some of the industries? Them.
Okay, so one of the first things that we tend to talk about is that the aviation sector is a huge value chain. So in South Africa, I think it was somewhere along the lines of $12 billion in 2014, so that's gross value added in 2014. And direct jobs are about 70,000. But the total jobs that actually are attached to this particular sector is 490,000 jobs that are attached to the sector. And in fact, they're dominated by the tourism sector, which is about 230,000. But the 230,000 is equivalent to the jobs that were sustained, the total jobs that were sustained before 2014. It's quite interesting from a market perspective. But when you add up the entire value chain, if you look at, for example, the impact of airports on small town and regional developments, Atlanta as a city is a product of the airport. Dubai as a location is a product of the airport and the airline attached to it. And the idea is, how do you create an institutional system that actually leverages on the benefits and understands the costs related to long-term investment? So right now we're not having that conversation. Number one, we're not attaching, you know, South African Airways or any airline with the intellectual side of the economy. So the knowledge economy, R&D, higher education, TVETs, research and development, etc. If we, for example, just to highlight, just to lean back on your introduction,
sure.
If we, for example, think about how we could restructure the airline, one of the main starting points is to turn it into a platform for actual development, not a quick fix, sell out, you know, kind of exercise. Move into concessions, public-private partnerships that are focused on developmental exercises. So SAA can become this, you know, aviation, industrial sort of platform, but that is so hard to do, and nobody is willing to take the responsibility to do that. It's expensive as well, but it can be cheap, you know, in the long run.
Tito Mboweni told Parliament that he doubts that SAA in its current state will be able to find an equity partner who will assist them. And because as an equity partner, you'd have to immediately assume debt of some 21 billion rand, equivalent to 1.5 billion US dollars. So what are the prospects here, if any, Hlulani, for a strategic equity partner here that would take part in a partial privatization?
Well, let's think about state-owned enterprises in the transportation context, right? So most of them are attached to their value chain. So you have the access component, which is the ports, so the place where people land and connect with the transport service. So it's train station, ports, etc. And then you also have the mobility side, so the transportation tools, so the transport units, right? And most of the state-owned enterprises relate to transport, like Transnet, PRASA, and if you look at SANRAL to some extent, they own these, or they have concessions with respect to these components. So there's a dual relationship. We have the ports, and we have the mobility side. South African Airways is a totally different beast because it's separated from AXA, you know? And that question is not on the table yet, mainly because of, you know, anti-competitive practice, even though we actually need to offset and leverage this particular business. Understanding that transportation businesses are both assets, so they relate to sort of the location and the access point, but they also are about the mobility as well. SAA is operating like it's like we're in Europe, you know, where, you know, this airline can just operate freely and generate enough revenue. And the truth is that in this particular environment, we're in a development state. So we actually have to think about it as a developmental exercise more than just a commercial exercise. So when you want to bring in an equity partner, the question would be, is the equity partner, number one, you know, a cash injector, or is the equity partner a resource injector? Those are two different things, you know.
When you say resource injector, do you mean sort of, as you were saying initially, a resource injector into other industries that are sort of incidental to the functioning of an airline?
Well, partly. Also, if you look at most of the turnaround plans tend to talk about skills. They have a tendency to emphasize on human capital development. And human capital in the aviation sector, especially in Africa, has actually not realized sufficient investment. And that is one of the key limitations we have, especially when we're trying to implement something like the Yamoussoukro Declaration, which argues that we need to open up our market, so Africa needs to open up its market to itself, right, through integrated technology, marketing, etc. But all of that requires skills located on the ground, right from the industrial side, right, whether it's through high-value products that we manufacture through good quality land, distributed through trucks and rail transportation, connected to the airports and distributed regionally, so throughout our continent and also internationally. I mean, think about it. In the face of a trade war, the best bet we have is strengthening our supply chains. You know, I mean, this is...
You're saying this is?
Oh, this is quite essential. It's quite an essential move, yeah, to just back into it and focus on the long-term trajectory of development and not necessarily jumping out. So but, as a resource, resource injector would be an entity or group of bodies that are injecting the resources that are required to convert South African Airways into a developmental engine. You know, but looking at it from an equity perspective, cash-wise, that would be viable, would commercialize it and go through something similar to what happened with something in between Air France's transition. But the big risk with that is exposure to labor volatility and the loss of nationalist positions. So it's a bit complicated.
So, Sulani, here's the other question. I mean, I'd be interested to hear from you. It does seem that there's a big lobby emerging here that's pushing for the privatization of SAA, just on the back, of course, of some of the fiscal and contingent risks it presents to our fiscus. And, I mean, we spoke to one of the ratings agencies on Monday, and they were quite sort of strong in their scathing criticism of the fiscal risks that are presented by some of these SOEs, more notably SAA. And I'd be interested to find out, I mean, what response would you give in support of this developmental approach that you've just outlined to someone who places the figures before you and says, look, you know, if we continue in this vein, 5 billion, say, into the outer years of the medium-term expenditure framework, then we might find ourselves in a pickle here and we need to cut our losses and move.
Yeah, well, one side, yes, we need to cut our losses and move. The question is, which losses do we cut? You know, do we cut the traditional dominant narrative that we should let go of South African Airways as is? That is quite clear, you know, because there are a lot of governance and systematic issues that are inside the entity. However, there is also an opportunity to direct the capital that we inject into a totally different storyline. So if the allocations, the guarantees, the financial incentives are structured around disincentivizing poor quality behavior, I mean, then we'd actually get into a totally different narrative.
How would we do that, Sulani?
Okay, well, the biggest mistake we've made is we focused on corrective behavior, so correction. So we think that putting the money in would correct the problem, whereas we haven't actually considered the punishment element of non-compliance. So this is what we've been doing quite consistently. Very good at enabling, you know, the narrative to continue saying you need to be a competitive airline, but not necessarily facilitating the process for the carrier itself as an entity to be a complementary body for our entire value chain. So it's not playing an enabling role. It's still behaving as if it's a commercial carrier. It's not. It's a national carrier. And that's where, you know, the big friction actually is.
And what needs to happen? Because I'm interested here when you say there's a difference between a normal sort of aviation player and a national carrier. And I recall, just over a year ago, where the Competition Commission came down heavily on SAA for some of the collusive activity in the travel market agency market, and they were sort of pushing some of their flights at the top of the pile there with some of the travel agencies that they had associations with. And how would a national carrier sustainably be able to conduct its operations with the kind of credit that it has? And what nature do those conversations with some of the lenders take on, where, you know, it's a question of renegotiating and refinancing some of that debt and even extending the maturity? What do you place on the table in return?
Well, so here are the two sides. The one side is we can have the financial conversation with the existing airline, right? As an airline, right? That would not work. It would not work because the governance structure, the instruments that we're using, and the sort of the way in which performance is managed, you know, whether between National Treasury and SOEs or South African Airways, you know, the performance metrics are not appropriate for the kind of situation we're in. That's one side. The other side is when we look at it from a gross value added perspective, when we look at it as a body of systems. And we don't just look at it from a credit rating agency perspective or from a lender's perspective, because lenders are concerned with the commercial viability of an entity. Countries are concerned with the developmental progress or contribution that an entity can provide to a nation. And so those are the two difficult conversations. Right now, we've expired the second one. We almost can't have the gross value added conversation because the airline has become financially inviable. At the same time, we should have the gross value added conversation on condition that the airline itself is moved. So the paradigm that we're operating with shifts away from thinking of this entity as an airline. We have to shift the narrative and stop trying to sort of imitate, you know, international, so other countries and their practices, whereas their commercial practices, whereas they have completely different systematic practices, right? Like, you can't just take, you know, commercial behavior in Switzerland and say, we can do it here.
Sure, it
doesn't work like that. There are systematic differences, whether it's cultural, political, institutional, and so on. So what we have to do is really sit through a very difficult negotiation platform where on one side you're trying to make it financially viable as a different type of entity, not as an airline. For as an airline, I don't think it's appropriate, but as a platform for development, I think it can be viable.
Sulani. Yeah. Really, really appreciate that you could share some of your thoughts and insights there, calling for a paradigm shift in how we think about SAA, not just as an airline or a carrier, but as an industrial platform and an industrial hub to be able to boost the gross value added in some of the sectors that are incidental to the airline sector.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.